So tell me about sort of what then inspired this, because you've had projects in the past that have, you know, gone to completion, others that seem like good ideas, and then maybe not so much. You've made a game together before. Why this game? Why Metroidvania, you know, Devil May Cry inspired? Like, what led you to want to make Vernal Edge?
Well, I'm the one who started this project, and Alex joined on a little while after. And I started this project because at the time I was focusing on freelance work, making art for other indie games. And I was just not having a very, I guess, invigorating time doing so. You have to accommodate for everyone's budgets and whatnot, and I really wanted to stretch my wings. So one time when I was particularly frustrated, I downloaded a bunch of trials for game engines and game maker stuck. And I said, well, you know what? I'm just going to make what I want to make, and I'm just going to make it stupid and big, and it's probably not going to go anywhere. And here we are 2 years later.
Yeah, it's sometimes hard to tell what's going to go somewhere and what's not, but you have to try.
Yeah, and Alex joined on about somewhere between 6 and 8 months after that started.
June of last year, so just about a year on the project. Mm-hmm. As for like the specifics of the game, I think it came from, I'm in a similar place for both of us, where we just... it's a lot of it is a response, you know, a lot of it is just frustration. Like, man, I wish there were more games where there was more free exploration, you know, stuff that isn't like, okay, well, I have to backtrack through like a couple of rooms, but the game's like telling me exactly where to go. It's not like, you know, but we both sort of long for the days, you know, like, man, I remember playing this old RPG or Metroidvania or whatever, and you could just, there were just, you didn't know what was around the corner, you know?
And it feels like a lot of the 3D equivalents, like what people would consider modern sandbox games, don't have that Symphony of the Night, Super Metroid feel, right? Like an open world can be big and empty and boring and uninteresting, right?
Well, it's totally different from a gameplay perspective when it comes to, like, most open worlds don't really function the same way that most Metroidvanias do. And we're trying to go in a direction where we can have it be maximally explorable. Like, we want... I don't want to say we want it to be so open that it's overwhelming, because that's not the case. But we want to maximize your choice in where to go, which actually isn't, in a lot of Metroidvanias, isn't even really the case. Because a lot of times you're just going back to the door you can now open. But we're like, what if we took that formula and added this island concept where you had a very broad choice in where to go in these little maps, and maybe there's like this part that you can't get to. Well, now instead of, you know, well, I'll go down the other hallway, the question is, all right, now I have like all of these islands to go to, you know, otherwise. And it's just something that it's a really addictive and fun feeling to just, oh, what's over here, what's over here, what's over here, you know.
So is it fair to assume that both of you have played Hollow Knight in the past?
Yeah. We streamed it for our development stream.
In terms of the feeling of exploring the game, for me, I'd probably say Hollow Knight and Dark Souls 1 are the games that have sort of that feeling that I'm looking for, which is that feeling of really knowing that there are so many more paths for you to explore and going down a path, and, you know, you have like three hallways to go down to, essentially, and you go down one and there's another branch, and just being like filled with that sense of wonder of like, wow, there really could be anything. And as far as Metroidvanias go, Hollow Knight is extremely open, as opposed to a lot of them. So that's a big inspiration as well, is seeing that formula done in a way that's a little more open-ended.
And Matt, on the stream, you had talked about kind of a plan to include opportunities for sequence breaking and you know, for clever players to be able to break out of sort of what's expected or what's maybe the more obvious path. And when I think of Metroidvanias that really nailed that, Hollow Knight's always that one that comes to mind. So is that the same kind of, yeah, there's a way to get up here that's the official way, or you can be clever and maybe get up here in like a sort of sneaky way?
That's definitely a major part. Hollow Knight was inspiring to me in that once you get a power up, there are multiple completely viable paths to take in order to progress the game. Sequence breaking to me stands out as something I really want to do because of Super Metroid. With it's having such a huge array of hidden mechanics. Well, it's probably only two or three, but they're really substantial.
They're two or three very meaningful. Again,
playing through Super Metroid again when you know about shine breaking and wall jumping opens up the game progression in a completely different way and lets you like try to go to places that you might not have the HP and missiles to go to safely right now and challenge yourself and to just see how you can break away from what you know is a predetermined formula.
Yeah, and I think you described it perfectly, right? Is I maybe shouldn't go over here just yet, but I love that being in my hands as the player. Certainly not a Metroidvania, but in the more modern Fallout games and even the original ones, if you are expected to go east out of the first town and you decide to go northwest, you probably die immediately. But the game doesn't tell you you can't go up into the Deathclaw factory. Like you can absolutely.
I love that immediate impulse because those games. I mean, I haven't played much of the Fallout 3 through 4 or the Elder Scrolls games, but something I've always liked is how they. When they release you, they tell you explicitly to go one way, and you know every designer in that studio, they told you to go that way because they knew you wouldn't. They tell you go this way because they know that most people or at least a large number of people are going to hear that, and it's like reverse psychology, you know? So we're definitely that feeling of like, well, you should go over here and do this, but it's like, oh, there's this whole what's going on over here in this island? You know, this totally unrelated thing.
What's this big wheel sticking out the side of the island? I gotta look at it.
There's a simple joy in just not doing what you're told.
I think that's a great way to sum it up, is like, they want me to do this, so I'm gonna do anything but that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just fun. It's just a fun thing to do, you know? Is to just directly disobey. Because, I mean, you don't get much of a chance to do that in real life, do you? There are consequences. But that's one of the fun things about games is exploring your own agency in a world where the consequences aren't real, you know? But as for the combat, actually, because we talked about the exploration for a while.
Yeah, and this is something that I think really got my attention when I first learned about this game, because Matt, I can't remember if it was from you or if it was one of the other pixel artists that you have worked with or that, you know, is part of that community. But I saw this game and I was just like, oh, that artwork is really pretty. And then I was looking at animations of the combat style and I was like, oh, huh, right? Because Super Metroid, I wouldn't say has particularly novel combat. Symphony of the Night has a lot going on, but really you swing your sword or you cast a spell and that's kind of it, right? There's a lot of variety in swords and spells, but that's kind of where it stops. Hollow Knight has a lot of complicated platforming while the combat is happening, but the depth isn't, maybe I'm just a bad player, but the depth for me wasn't like super varied, right? It's a lot tied up in the nail and the platforming, and none of these are bad choices, but you two went in a really specific direction, right? Where you've called out Devil May Cry as an inspiration. What is it about that kind of juggling enemies, always be swinging, you know, switching from enemy one to enemy two to enemy three so that they can't get their feet back under them? What about that did you want to sort of capture and why?
So, just as a small aside, no, nothing against the other games that have less I guess, dedicated action systems, because for a lot of those games, the exploration is more of a focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still think Hollow Knight did a particularly good job because its combat system is just engaging enough.
It's simple, but there's enough there to keep you sort of strategizing about it.
Yeah, but the depth of combat in that game is more born from the behavior of the enemies you fight and how they make you react to them rather than your own kit of abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we really wanted to have an expressive kit of abilities that you mm-hmm. can use when fighting enemies. We don't get to show off much of this during the demo because time is finite, but we wanted to give you more spells and limited slots to equip them so you think more carefully about your own personal loadout going into encounters. You get to manage your items, and we're still working on a system where you can equip extra contextual attacks or bonuses to your current abilities to help you make more cool and fluid combos.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even just in the demo, I found myself, when I was streaming it, really gravitating toward the like buzzsaw spell, because
that's my favorite too. Yeah.
Well, that gave me the confidence to say, like, I'm going to put my back to this guy for a second while the buzzsaw kind of deals with him. Or I know his health is low enough that the buzzsaw will finish him off while I go and, you know, dedicate my attention to this baddie that still has full poise, or that just got up and now their poise is restored and, like, I have to knock him back down. So even just with the spells and the techniques that are in the demo, I could tell, like, these kind of fit my playstyle already, and those I could learn, but they're the less naturally obvious choice for the way I play, and I could imagine that being very different player to player.
Yeah, and as you would play through the final game, you would find more than four spells. You get to really feel like you have a kit that suits how you play.
Yeah, we really wanted... I mean, one of our core pillars is definitely player expression through the moment-to-moment mechanics, both in the combat and the movement. And we wanted multiple solutions to problems, but not in the way that it's very obvious, oh, you can do it this way or this way, but we wanted to facilitate, like, that sort of multitasking that you were talking about, where your choices are really meaningful, and there are better and worse ways to do things, but your tool set is so broad and the options are varied enough that there are multiple correct ways to do it. And it all comes down to what you're the most comfortable with, what you find the most fun, or, you know, if you're in any whatever given situation.
And that must be the juggling act for you two as the designers, is how do you have a lot of options and not have, you know, say 10 options, one obviously wrong option, one obviously optimal option, and then 8 kind of in the middle options, right? Is like, how do you, and maybe this is too big of a question, but it's certainly something you must have to think about. How do you make sure if I choose to play one way, I can still enjoy the game, as opposed to someone who chooses to play a different way and feels like it's a total cakewalk because this combination of techniques is undefeatable, or this spell followed up by that technique always is like a damn near one hit kill, right? Those kinds of balancing acts must be like an you know, like a logarithmic problem. Like, here's one more technique, now we just made the whole combat system that more complicated.
it's very hard. I will briefly talk on this because this is I designed most of the moves, so I encountered this a lot. I guess I'll frame this as kind of advice because I think it is the best way to do it. Is you need to create, I guess, what I call vectors for balancing, like, because it solves multiple problems at once, right? We have a poise system, we have the stun system, and we have enemy health. Imagine in a world where Vernal Edge only has health as a resource that enemies have. We could not possibly balance all these moves. The fact that hitting enemies rapidly will stop their stun from decaying as fast, the fact that some moves deal poise damage and some enemies have or don't have poise, means that we have more opportunities for functions that don't overlap. So this does low damage, but does high poise damage. This does high damage, but does no poise damage. And it just makes the gameplay and decision-making more interesting in and of itself. So it's better for us as designers for actually making and balancing options, and it's better for players because it's just more interesting to consider, and there are more game states that are interesting to encounter.
And how do you know when you feel like, okay, this is enough, right? Because an expansive toolkit, if the goal is more, there's potentially no ceiling on that. So how do you say, enemies have HP and poise, but they don't have seven other factors that you have to mitigate? And anyone who's listened to recent episodes of Nostalgia Goggles knows that I've been subtweeting my complaints against Final Fantasy 13 a lot. And one of the things that I hated about that game is the way they implemented the stagger system, because you just have to keep,
I know a lot of people have problems with that.
Right. It's like I have to keep 1,000 different things in mind for each enemy on how I proceed. And it's too much. Like, there's a deep and interesting system there, but
like
it's not fun.
It would have been better if they relaxed the ATB aspect and made it a little more turn-based, because it's easier to consider, you know, if you had to play like turn-based games in real time, or imagine playing like a strategy RPG, you know, and trying to micromanage all that stuff. And it's like, sometimes you can mitigate it just by giving the player more time to decide, because if the decisions are harder to make, you know, and again, yeah, that can like cloud your mind to the point where it's just like, well, I can't pay attention to all this stuff, and it's just wasted design, you know, because nobody's gonna think about it. And we actually had that, that problem at some point when poise was not in individual pips. Poise used to be just like a bar, and every attack did this like weird nebulous amount where it's like, this does like 150 and this does 125, this does 200. Right. And we found that people, there's no way they could have like known which are better for which situations. So they just don't engage with that and just like spam normal attacks at the enemies until they're stunned. So sometimes it's better to simplify a problem to the point where it's reasonable for people who've never played the game to get on the ground floor and understand the dynamics between the resources.
Yeah, and that's one of the questions that I was actually most interested in, because I'm pretty aware as a game player what my limitations are, where my strengths and weaknesses are, because I spend a huge chunk of my life talking about other people's video games and thinking deeply about the games I've been playing. And what that made me question with a game like this is, how do you, if you are trying to, and this isn't a gotcha question, I'm just genuinely curious about it. How do you balance accessibility of the game with some of these more complicated mechanics? Because exactly as you said, I could just stand there and just, you know, mash standard attack until they fall down, but that's probably not super fun. But if the controls require super complicated, hair trigger response, that might reduce the accessibility to someone who can't, you know, do those more complicated, you know, thumb fumbling. So how do you sort of walk that line, or is that something that you're even necessarily concerned with? Because some games can't be, you can't go for the mechanics you want and make it available to every single player of every different games literacy and type. So how have you thought about accessibility?
Well, the biggest part of it, obviously there's literal accessibility, you know, offering options for people to get different control schemes.
Let's draw a line right here. So much of accessibility does not overlap with game like mechanics and difficulty like at all. A lot of it's just like alternate control schemes, colorblind mode, stuff like that. So, but there are, of course, games literacy, it's a sliding scale, and whatever other cognitive concessions need to be made in the game can have an impact. Man, it's a big question.
Well, here, I've got a good starting point. A large component of it is actually the expressiveness of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because aside from having lots of attack options, we also have a decent array of defensive options.
Mm-hmm.
Alex and I have cried about the fact that people don't block all the
people
time.
People don't block. They
but
we love block. We love having more than just a dodge roll in games. But people don't. It's like people are so trained. They're like, all right, I got my invincible dodge, and that's all I need.
Yeah. So we have multiple avenues for dealing damage, and we have multiple avenues for staying safe.
Mm-hmm.
And blocking, I think, it has some nuances to it, like the fact that when you hit the block button, it's only for a short amount of time that you actually block attacks, and it's only in that one direction.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some nuance to it for like more advanced players to take advantage of, but people who don't have quite as good a sense of timing or positioning or spacing can rely on that option while they adjust to the game.
Mm-hmm.
As well as players who have a hard time keeping track of their charged attacks, for instance, I found usually tend to rely a lot more on the resource management components of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll throw out a lot more normal attacks and spells and build up their resources. And I found that their completion time isn't too far off from players who have a more comprehensive understanding of their moveset.
Yeah, we're definitely assisted in that aspect by how broad our design is. And again, in the full game, there's even more stuff like you can equip whatever spells suit you. So like if you don't really feel like micromanaging your mana, you could just equip like four spells that take like a massive amount and do a massive amount, you know. Or if you don't feel prepared for a boss, if it's like too quick or too damaging for you, you can just go to other islands and get, you know, health upgrades and stuff. So there's definitely other vectors for people to like make up for shortcomings. We also plan to include, if we have time, because we want to include as many accessibility features as we can, but we need to finish the game first. So I hate to guarantee anything, but we want to try to include an option to slow down or speed up the game based on, because that doesn't, you know, and of course like an easy mode that's just and we don't want to half-ass the easy mode too much, because I know that like it'd be so easy for us to be like, all right, you just get double health. But we still want people to like be able to engage with the systems. And I feel like if you're really lame to.
Well, a slowdown speed up, I think, is, I mean, there's no question the best accessibility mode I've ever seen. And when I say accessibility in this case, I do mean literal, you know, needs of the human being, and then also their game's literacy needs being met, is Celeste, right? The accessibility feature is so good.
Yeah. That's the biggest modern example, probably the biggest example, period.
So you mentioned, or you maybe teased, because unless this was in the demo and I just missed it, which is not impossible, but it sounds like there will be some ways to improve your avatar's strength, right? So Vernal can actually get, it sounded like more health, but then are there going to be other, you know, kind of pseudo RPG elements where the avatar gets stronger as well as the player getting better, or is it mostly the human player needs to, you know, get good?
We're going to have a couple of those aspects, like just literally increasing the size of your health, mana, and pulse resources.
I'd say it's like 85% like player skill growth, but there is elements of, yeah, just little upgrades for your health and mana, and then also the equipable abilities, which will mostly be like things that you have to take advantage of in order to use. So we don't want to have all of your little equipable abilities be like plus strength, you know. We want to have them be like, oh, this move gets this property, you know, so it changes sort of the implication of it. And you have to, you know, we're still relying on the player to actually take advantage of it. It's not free, you know.
Yeah, adding another tool, not just making the one hammer they have a bigger hammer.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, changing the hammer to be, you know, a mallet instead of a, one with the little screw thing on. I don't know what the term for it is, you know. But stuff like that. There probably will be things that technically make you more powerful. Again, there's going to be health upgrades. So we're not shy about, like, making RPG-style upgrades. It's just not going to be a massive... literally increasing the amount of strength your character has is not a thing we're really interested in. You only really get the health and mana upgrades, like, basically as excuses for us to throw harder challenges at you, you know? And for you to, like, pay more attention to micromanaging your mana, because... you know, you'll be able to use 5 spells instead of 3 before you run out.
So tell me about the feedback portion of this, because you've both said, you know, seeing players, watching someone play, you know, the things you've heard or observed people doing. And I was humbled to have both of you come and watch my stream and chat with me about it. And I really appreciated that. But I'm kind of curious what is that experience like for the two of you? So you're watching someone play. What are you watching for? What do you learn about that? And if you have one of these off the top of your head, what's the most surprising thing you've learned watching someone play where you're like, oh, I didn't think of that at all. This one totally caught me off guard.
Well, I think I'm the one doing most of the watching these days.
I've, in the past couple of weeks, I've gotten so sick of the demo because I've been doing most of like the programming and testing for the last couple months, just because, man,
you just pump
out a ton of art assets for the demo. Mm-hmm. So, and the trailer. So I'm so sick of it. I hate watching people play now.
Mm-hmm. I'm a bit less sensitive to that, so I've been watching a lot of streams. Yeah. What I'm looking out for, obviously, bugs. They're smart.
That goes without saying, I guess. But yeah,
the big thing that I look for when watching people play now is I look for unexpected habits that they're carrying over from other games. Like, yeah. I've noticed a couple people struggle particularly with platforming, and it's because they're not adjusted to ledge grabbing as it is now. Because the way we have ledge grabbing now is when you fall towards a ledge, you have to hold the direction to grab the ledge, because we didn't want people to be accidentally grabbing ledge unless they intended to.
Mm-hmm.
But for some people who aren't used to that kind of functionality, they'll see that they came up short in the jump and just let go of the stick.
It's like how some people, when they're doing like an input in a game, mash. You know how, like, if you're trying to roll out of an attack, a lot of people will like just mash the roll button like 7 times. I do that. Some people don't, you know, and there's some games that like punish those little weird habits. So we have to try to accommodate stuff like that and know, like, you know, not everyone has this particular instinct, and some people have this other weird thing that, you know, it results in them not being able to perform this reliably.
Yeah, like some people have even mentioned that they don't like hitting the jump button after getting stunned to recover from it right away, and I'm just like, but it lets you recover however you want. And it doesn't.
I mean,
and taking that feedback seriously, we are absolutely taking all that feedback seriously, but it doesn't mean we're saying, oh, we have to change this, because no. Instead, we're channeling that energy to saying, like, okay, well, in the future, when we get to work on the full game, we have to teach the player how this works. We have to tutorialize it in such a way so that that disconnect isn't as big of an issue.
Yeah, there's some things that people will say, like, this feels weird, and you'll be like, okay, I'll adjust it. And there's some things that it's like, oh, this is like a little weird or a little difficult, and you just gotta be like, that's, you gotta learn the game. That's that's the point.
Yeah, that's the great burden of every artist, right? Is saying, this is the thing that I will accept feedback on, and this is the thing that is like, no, this is working as designed.
Like, I'm sorry that you got hit, but you know.
We've had like complaints of like, oh, this, why does this work like that? That's, you know, and it's like, well, it's specifically to punish the thing you're doing. But you know, you just have to make a call sometimes.
not every game is made for everybody, but we can take all that feedback and help people better accommodate the things they might not be used to or might not intuit right away.
Yeah. Just
because they're used to other games.
Matt, can I tell you how glad I am to hear you say that? Because as a person who makes things, granted, they require a lot less skill than the things you're making. But it is really tempting to say, like, no, we want everyone in the world should all come together and drink a Coke. And that was my second Coke reference. We're not sponsored by Coke, but everybody should come together and all play the game. Right. But, that's just not really the way most good art gets made, right? You have to go for whatever your vision is, understanding that some people can't or just won't be into that particular thing. And that's okay. They're not being excluded. It's just not everything, not every game, not every piece of music, not everything can be made for everyone, because the only things I know of that are that universal are water, air, and food, and people still even find ways to complain about those.
Yeah. And like I said, we do want everyone to have an option, but we also acknowledge that it's still not for everyone.
It's a tough call to make. You have to do it case by case. Like, if someone who's colorblind says, like, hey, I can't distinguish between this, then you change it. Because, like, you're not going to use that excuse for that. You're not going to be like, well, it's not made for colorblind people. You know, that's an extreme case, but I'm sort of using it to point out that you always have to be like, well, this isn't, you know, putting this in, is this a concession? Like, is this hurting the point, the artistic goals? Most of the time, no. But if the answer comes down and it's like, yes, this is weird or this is annoying to some people, but it is pretty much exactly what we want to do and what we want to say, then sometimes you do have to put your foot down.
I'm glad to hear you guys say that, because I really think that's the right way to approach any creative project. I do have to make my one request. What I was really wanting while I was playing the demo was that weighty feeling you get when you kill someone with the home run bat in Super Smash Brothers.
I've been thinking about, like, that. There's basically one archetype that I have in my mind right now that we're missing from our moveset, and it's one really big hit that takes way too long. And we need that. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to do it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
One of the best pieces of feedback I got throughout the testing process was they wished there were more moves that felt like finishing moves.
Mm, okay.
And so that has been something I've been thinking about a lot. And that's definitely a big contributor to it.
Yeah, well, and this is something that you even said to me while I was streaming, which was, you know, you can charge at the end of your combo, right? So even the idea of a finishing move kind of becomes a personal flavor, right? Am I trying to chain a three hit combo and then a big, like, kabam at the end? Or am I trying to hit them infinity times until they die and I don't need that big finishing kabam, right? So for me, like, based on the request I just gave you, I think it's pretty obvious I want the big, like, wind up and then time slows down and their eyes bug out and they go rocketing off the edge of the screen. Like, to me, that feels good, but I could totally respect someone who's like, oh, I didn't even know that move was in there because I just kill them by a million paper cuts and then zip off to the next combat.
Letting
we definitely do need one or two more. Like, there's like the findable spell in the demo is kind of a fun finisher. The like the million stabs in the big one. The forward pulse, but there's not that much. So we definitely, that's one thing we're trying to, like, find spots in the moveset for. And this is where our, like, equipable abilities come in, where we can say, like, all right, this changes this move into this, or it makes this, like, contextual version of it available, where you can hold the button or something.
That always makes me think of, like, the charge upgrade in the Mega Man X series, where you have your shot, you have your charge shot, you have your supercharged shot, but then you get the like crazy extra one.
And the one, like all the ones like circling around it.
Yeah. Yeah. Where it's like, it's a huge time investment, but man, the payoff is there if you get it right. Right. Like if you get knocked down and you fire it through a wall where there's no enemies, then you feel kind of like a moron. But man, when you nail it, it's just like, if someone is dumb enough to walk up to you when you've got the fully charged home run bat, like it's just, it's a good feeling.
Yeah. So we're definitely looking for ways. We really want to like implement them as pulse moves, but we don't really. It's like, how do we put more on? We already have all the directions. So, well, you know, we're still figuring it out.
So I'm going to ask you one more thing as we wrap up here, which I know just from my own experience and literally things you've both said during this conversation, that there's a couple things I missed in the demo. Of the play sessions you have watched, is there anything hidden in, and you don't have to tell me what it is there anything hidden in the demo that no one has found as far as you know?
That no one, I think people found things we didn't even intend for them to find, honestly.
There's been a couple of like people got like to these weird, most of them I don't care about fixing because it involves an infinite horizontal movement exploit that we just left in because we thought it'd be fun for people to find, but will be patched out of the main game. But there was one that was, there's one secret where there's a smiley face made out of flowers somewhere. And I put that in because it was in a thing that was, nobody found it until it was like version 1.0 of the Kickstarter demo we put out to a couple of trusted people to test. And one person found it. And I think only one other person that we know of has found the smiley face flower room.
So there's still exploring left to be done, even in the demo. That's awesome. I mean, there's still, you know, it's just the demo and there's still juice to squeeze out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we hit a boss, but I've actually told a lot of people where it is because
yeah, there is a secret harder version of the boss hidden in the demo.
Yes, I was able to get up there. Matt kind of gave me directions and then watched me flounder at wall jumping, which is not on the game. That was totally on me. My timing was just a mess, and I very quickly realized that I was not up to snuff with that boss just yet. So I.
It was deliberately made to be like very hard. It just something like
just one of those,
because there's only so much content in a demo. So it's like, if someone's really interested in this, let's give them something to chew on, you know.
Yeah, one of those fights where you just go at it again and again and you finally do it.
I love, it's one of my favorite experiences in games is the really, like, when you get to the final boss or an optional thing, and it's just, like, sometimes it'll take you multiple days to do it. Like, you'll do, like, a 2-hour session and be like, all right, I'll try again tomorrow. Of just one boss. And I guess, I mean, I know a lot of people don't like that. So we're keeping, like, really difficult stuff like that to harder difficulty modes and optional content. So we're not gonna make you too upset in the main game. But for people like us that are crazy and masochistic, we'll have like those really brutally hard bosses and challenges and stuff.
I'm with you. I think that's the right way to do it. Right? Is make the game, you know, as broad as possible, and then for the crazies, and I count myself among them. I did beat the hidden bosses in Hollow Knight, although it took me like weeks of trying.
Same. 100% same.
But this has been really awesome. I appreciate you guys coming on, talking to me. I'm going to put links to the Kickstarter, to both of you and your work in the show notes. But besides the Kickstarter, is there anything specific you wanted to plug or let folks know about to keep an eye on or look out for?
Dude, the Kickstarter is like 100% of our focus right now.
You know what? I will say two things because two people helped us get here. Go look up Domino99 Designs on Twitter because he helped work on some of the promotional material we put in our trailer assets.
We talked a little bit about people who helped us in a Kickstarter update as well, if you want more details.
Yeah, and go look up the game Forgotto, because I became good friends with the lead artist and designer for that project, Detrol, and he really helped me push my art up ahead.
He drew the ship in the demo as well.
Mm-hmm.
90% of it was us too, but we definitely have a lot of people who are like just super reliable, super good people that helped us push that extra bit that we couldn't do.
And it shows that you guys are putting all your love and attention into this, because even just the demo was super fun. So I appreciate you, what you're doing. I've backed, so I hope listeners go check out the Kickstarter, play the demo. If you like it, if it's fun, back it so it can exist. Help these guys make a game.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been super fun to be on the show. Go play our demo. Even if you don't back the Kickstarter, play the demo. I promise it's good.
Go beat the secret boss.
And thank you for having us.
You don't have to. You don't have to beat the secret boss.
Do it if you want to.
If you do it and screenshot it and send it in the Discord, I'll give you a thumbs up emoji.
The curtain falls. The music plays. The credits roll. Then it all fades to black. And you're left by yourself. The fanfare is gone. There's no player two there by your side to share victories won. But as you slowly progress down the hall to your bed, a few great events leak back into your head from the time that you spent traversing the land. Battling evil, fighting the darkness, just sword in hand. Your memories creep in with the edge of a smile. You realize again what you've lost for a while. You're gonna think back much less